Yeah.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Well, my family.
No, let me introduce you first, Mary.
And then she'll ask you a question.
And I'll ask you a question.
Yeah. So you probably.
It is May 5th, 2015, and we are here at the Urbana Archives with the first of, we hope, many sessions with members of the League of Women Voters of Champaign County. Our first interviewee is Mary Blair, who is a longtime member of League. And I'm Barbara Wysocki, and I'm so happy to have this opportunity to interview Mary about her activities with the League, as well as learn more about Mary's life, her long life, both here in Champaign County as well as in the East Coast. So, Mary, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, my family came originally from Czechoslovakia.
When was that?
Excuse me?
When did they come?
1913.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And this is, I always thought this was interesting. My mother was a cook for a very well-to-do family in Prague, and my father was the gardener there. And that's how they met. And, you know, it sounds like Downton Abbey or something. My parents bought our house, and my father wanted a lot next to it so he could do gardening on a big scale. But they didn't have enough money, so they just bought the house, and some years went by, and he couldn't stand it. He had to have that lot, so he did. He bought the lot, and he had a wonderful garden there. And I remember, you know, talk about people thinking they're so wonderful when they have fresh vegetables. Well, we had fresh vegetables all the time, and we had sweet corn. We had what you call either hotbeds or cold somethings. Hotbeds or cold beds, anyway. So my parents just planted things, and they were natural gardeners. We had raspberries along one side of the fence and blackberries along another part of the fence, and some strawberries, and we had an apricot tree. And I don't remember ever having apricots off it, but we did have it. And everybody had apple trees. Our neighbors had mulberry trees. So we grew up on this street that had some interesting people living there.
So when you came to the United States, you settled in Cleveland?
My dear, I was born in the United States.
You were born here, okay.
It was my parents who came to the United States, okay.
And they settled in Cleveland. Okay.
Well, Cleveland at that point had many, many people, you know, immigrants, a lot of them from the central part of Europe. There were a lot of jobs. They were hard jobs, and they were in mills and stuff like that. But these people were so happy to have jobs and to be able to buy a house. And that was exciting because in Europe they never could have bought a house. They'd have been renting all their life. So my family thought that was pretty wonderful.
So you went to
Oberlin.
Okay. Where did you go to grade school?
I went to Lafayette School in Cleveland. I walked to school every day. I went to a junior high, Alexander Hamilton Junior High, and I went to John Adams High School. And I'll have you know that I still am in touch with two girls who were in my class in high school, which means that we are all pretty old. however, that's really interesting. We gab a lot about what we did then.
Okay, so then you went to Oberlin.
Yes.
And why did you choose Oberlin?
Well, my parents never could have afforded to send me to Oberlin. And I once realized when I went back over that if we had sold our house, it probably would have paid for 1 year living at Oberlin. But the people across the street were very good friends of my family, so I spent my time running between these two sets of parents, and I was around adults all the time. And my neighbor across the street took me to museums, Cleveland Museum of Natural History and the Art Museum and all those things. So I had that advantage, which was really pretty wonderful. And I must tell you that all the kids in my elementary school spoke a different language at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, think about that. Here we were, we were bilingual. We were little kids.
Yeah.
Well, we learned English in kindergarten. Before that, we had spoken our parents' native language. And sometimes the parents, two sets of parents, couldn't speak to each other because one had a background that was Polish and one had a background that was Czech. So anyway, it was an interesting neighborhood where I lived.
Okay, so you went to Oberlin, and what did you major in?
English.
English, okay.
Yeah. And I wanted to be a librarian from the time I was in the third grade, because my elementary school had a full-time trained children's librarian with a library degree. And all the classes went to that library every single week, and we could pick out books and all that. So I learned about libraries very early. And the librarian taught us to find books, you know, according to Dewey.
Dewey, definitely.
Dewey, yeah. I didn't do much with a story. I don't remember listening to story hours when I was in elementary school, but I loved stories. And my father, before he died, read stories to me in Czech. And he died when I was 7. And he had taught me to write in Czech to my cousins in Czechoslovakia. My cousin, one cousin. And we did that. We had about one letter a year in which we didn't say anything consequential. But, you know, I touched that base. So I think that was an interesting part. And all the kids I knew spoke different languages at home. So.
Okay. So after college, did you become a librarian?
Yes, I went to library school at Western Reserve in Cleveland. And yes, I became a children's librarian. And I loved doing story hours. And at that point, the Cleveland Public Library didn't let its librarians read the stories. You had to learn them. You didn't have to memorize them word for word, but you had to internalize them so that you could speak out and tell them.
Okay.
And I really loved that part. That was just a lot of fun.
Okay. And then, when did you meet your husband?
I met him in 1942. I met him this September after I had left Oberlin. I was kind of shopping around for a church, and I consider myself a Protestant at large. So it doesn't matter to me whether I link up with Presbyterians or Episcopalians or somebody else. So.
And where did you meet him?
I met him at the Unitarian Church in Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they had a young people's group, and I was kind of looking around for some place to connect with some other young people, so I started to go to that church, and there was Locke.
Mm-hmm. And what was he doing at this point in his life?
He had a job with an architect, and he was doing all those things they call renderings, where you had to sketch a picture of the house that your client wanted to buy and so on. And Locke was able to do sketching, so he got along very well doing that.
Oh, okay. So when did you two get married?
In December of 1942.
Okay.
And then my husband volunteered for the service because He knew if he'd be drafted, he'd started out in the infantry, and he wanted to do something in engineering and architecture, so he volunteered. And he ended up, good heavens, I made a map one day of where his travels were, and I've given it to my grandson, and I'm tracking all this, and I'm amazed at how far he went. He did some interesting things, because after the war ended in Europe, he was sent through the Panama Canal and to go out to the west, to the Pacific part of the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
The ships after his were all turned around and came back to the United States because peace with Japan was declared at that point.
Uh-huh.
But his ship kept right on going, and he spent a year and a half occupying Korea, in Korea. So he was gone 3.5 years, and I worked as a children's librarian a lot of that time.
Okay.
And kept our apartment. We had a little apartment in Cleveland.
And so when he got back,
yeah,
Where did you settle? What did you do?
Well, he had had some work on college before he left. And he decided when he got back, he'd take advantage of the GI Bill and see if he could get into MIT. Mm-hmm. So that's what he did. And lo and behold, a few weeks after that, we discovered that the minister of our Unitarian Church was going to go to MIT to be the dean of students.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So I've always been fascinated by how coincidental some of these things are.
Okay. So you went with him when he went to MIT?
Yes.
Okay. And then when did he finish?
Yes, he finished and graduated. And of all this work that he'd had, he ended up with just a bachelor's degree. But here he'd had 2.5 years of college at Cleveland that MIT discounted. They might have given him credit for 1 year, but if you didn't have it at MIT, it didn't count. So.
And then he got a job?
Yes, his first job was in Providence, Rhode Island. Okay. And lo and behold, in the office next to him was Lou Wetmore. Lou Wetmore came here and was on the faculty of the Urban Planning, Department of Urban Planning here.
Okay.
So after he was here for a while and there was a vacancy, he asked Locke if he wouldn't like to come here.
Okay.
So we came here. And I expect that a lot of things like this go on. You go by word of mouth and your friend is doing something and suggested.
Yeah. So in the meantime, when you were in Providence, you were already connected with the League of Women Voters.
Yes, I was just an ordinary member of the League of Women Voters. But we moved to Lincoln, Rhode Island. That they had a little league. It had just finished being a provisional league.
Okay.
And they looked at me and they said, "Oh, we need a president." So at that point, they had gone through a lot of, this was a little league, they had had a lot of their members using, you know, filling vacant spaces.
Yeah.
And so I came along and I was this brand new face, and they said, fine, so.
Well, what influenced you to join this league?
Well, when I was growing up, you couldn't vote till you were 21.
Right.
And of course I was going to vote, I was going to be a good citizen. I didn't know anything about people in Oberlin, officers in Oberlin. I was going to have to vote in Cleveland, but I didn't know anything about the candidates in Cleveland. And then I remembered the League of Women Voters, which I had heard somewhere. And so I contacted them, and they sent me candidate information.
Oh, okay.
That's how I got it.
Oh, okay. And so you became the president of the League of Women Voters in Lincoln.
Rhode Island, yeah.
Okay. And do you remember any of the issues that you dealt with? No.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
I do. The thing I remember most was that at that point, the school committee had a program they called Release Time, in which school buses, public school buses, took kids from their schools and ferried them to their churches. But they got school credit for it. Well, this was very new to me. I'd come from this big city and, you know, I wasn't going to rock the boat when I first got there. So I went through that, and it turned out that we eventually got rid of release time. We got rid of release time because one of the priests in the Italian part of town came to the school committee one day and said, you know, the children come to my program at the end of the day on Friday, and they're very tired, and they're not really receptive to any learning. So I would respectfully ask you to change the time of their coming to the first hour on Mondays. So we took it under advisement. Okay, and that finally ended up, we eliminated it altogether because we found things that we shouldn't, that public schools shouldn't be doing. So we eventually voted to get rid of that. And then somehow, I can't remember now how I got to be the chairman of the school committee, but I served on that school committee for 6 years.
And this is not the League of Women Voters School Committee.
Excuse me?
This is the school committee of what?
Lincoln, Rhode Island.
Oh, of the school.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And how did I get on that? Because I was an observer.
Okay.
And the man who was supposed to be representing my area of the community didn't come. And one day I finally got up the courage and I said, why doesn't Mr. So-and-so? And they said, oh, he's taking inventory. So I asked the next month and he was still taking inventory. So then they looked at me and they said, you've been coming to the meetings. Why don't you come and be the representative? So that's how I got to the school.
Oh, okay. Okay, so when you agreed to do this, then you had to step away from being president
that's
of
right.
the league.
That's
okay.
right.
And how long were you then on the school board?
About 6 years, I think.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, and that I filled out a term that had been half completed, and then I ran on my own.
Okay.
And I thought I had done such a sterling job, and I was going to get this overwhelming vote. And I won by about 14 votes in this community.
Okay.
So then I ran again, and I ran just this little margin once more.
Okay, and you didn't have children in school yet, did you?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. So how long did you stay in Rhode Island?
I think at one point we figured out that a third of our lives had been spent in Cleveland. A third of our lives had been spent in New England, including Rhode Island. And then a third of our lives by that time was being spent here. And we came here in 1966.
Came to Champaign-Urbana.
Champaign-Urbana.
Okay, in 66. And your husband took his job at the university.
Yes, he was in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning.
And
teaching planning.
Okay. And then how did you connect with the league that was here?
Well, it was one of the first things I joined.
Okay.
Yes, and I think that Nell Leonard was the president of the league when I was here. And she was succeeded by Hermie Kreidenier, I think.
Yep.
And so I've been in the league a long time.
Okay. And by 1970, you had become president of this league.
Yes. So my husband always said very proudly, my wife was the president of two leagues of women.
Okay.
Two leagues of women.
And what were the big issues then?
Well, I was trying to put dates on these, and I couldn't. I do remember that we worked a lot. You know, Lady Bird Johnson was the president's wife at some point in there, and she was interested in keeping billboards off the interstates. So that was one of the things that sort of got gradually transferred to our league in the sense that we began to work on signs. And I remember when Joan Severance was the mayor of Champaign, we didn't try to eliminate signs. We tried to make them smaller and not so in your eye.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see how we would be fighting.
Okay. And any success? Were you able to?
We had some success. What we tried to do was to get some of the big things condensed and taking up smaller space, and we did have some success, but we didn't obliterate the big signs altogether, of course.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about league in those days. How big was the organization?
Well, the league was very different in those days. First of all, league women were volunteers at a lot of places, which eventually they got paid to do.
Okay.
So we were at home. We had little kids. We paid somebody to take five or six little kids while we went to league meetings. But we did a whole lot of quite different stuff. We had the committee that prepared the program item, then had to visit six or seven different league units, as we called them in those days. And there was a morning unit, there was an evening unit in Champaign, evening unit in Urbana, there was a unit in Rantoul, I think, that we went to. And that had been started by Hermie Kreidenier and Allen, Louise Allen.
Oh.
So, you know, the league was trying to get its program out into the community.
So you would, or somebody would do the program, in Champaign, Intervana, Mantua,
and that meant that there were five or six different meetings that the program committee had to take their program to and explain, and then they had to take the identical stuff to the next place and the next place. So we were all on the same page eventually.
Oh.
Yeah.
And how big were these groups?
Well, they were maybe 10 or 15 women in each spot. There would be women who could meet more easily in the afternoon. There would be women who liked to do it in the morning, so we had a group like that. Mm-hmm. And then there were women who were, we had an evening unit in Urbana and an evening unit in Champaign, I think. So we covered the territory pretty well.
So the evening group would be for those women who worked during the day?
Or just found it easier to come at night after they put their kids to bed or something that. Yeah.
Okay. Boy, that's a schedule.
It was just different.
Barbara, I'm wondering if they then had to have a large meeting to vote on a position. Those were just...
At the end of the league year, was there still an annual meeting?
Yes.
Just one of those?
One. Yeah, okay. And I can't remember. Maybe we had two, one in the morning and one in the evening. But we only had the same material. Would be the president would read her summary of the year's activities at each of these things.
Okay. Yeah. And when league had to vote on positions that came from state or national, again, you would go from meeting to meeting.
Remember, we never voted on a thing. We came to consensus.
That's right.
Okay, and so we did that, The thing was that after we had worked on one of these programs, we could move it over to a place called Continuing Responsibilities. Because, you see, you didn't want to let go of that item that you'd studied because it might come up.
Mm-hmm.
And we were afraid if we took it off, then it would come up and we wouldn't. So that list of things kept growing. And then we found, of course, we were outdated after a couple of years. That study that we had done had to be either updated or eliminated. So we were in a constant state of stewing about these things.
I see. Okay. But it sounds like those were very interesting meetings.
Oh, that we had a great time. And, you know, well, the league is an intelligent bunch of women. And so they enjoyed doing, you know, putting this material together, and they worked. We worked, of course, on some state items, and we worked on local items. Yeah, well, there was plenty to do.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about Observer Corps, but I think we're going to hold that till for a second session.
All right. Fine.
But you were president in the 70s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Did you hold other positions besides president?
Well, over the years, I worked on several programs and became a program chair of some item. And then I was always interested in the Observer. So off and on over this long period of time, I organized the Observer Corps when I had the chance to. And then my term voted not, and somebody else did it for a while. Sherry Dewan did it for a while, and then I took it over again because I had recruited all these women. And the thing is that once you recruit them, they were hooked. You know, you'd go and watch the school board and you'd want to know what they were going to do next. And of course, everybody had to write reports and then presented them at the meeting. So I always thought that was interesting. Not too many people do this consciously. It's just a small percentage of the general population. So I was always very proud of the league for making this kind of effort and calling people's attention to it if they could interest them some.
Okay. So basically, in your whole time in Champaign-Urbana, you've been leadership active in a lot of parts of league.
Yeah. In the Observer Corps for the longest time, yes.
Is that the one you're most fondest of?
Yes. Because that meant that a lot of league women were observing things. at first, the groups like the school board and the park board and those places were very suspicious of these league women that came along. And, you know, that it was the state that was sponsoring all this, of course, and we were taking part. And then eventually they realized that at a lot of the meetings, the only person from the public that came was a leaguer.
Yeah.
And so I think that in the end, they were glad to have leaguers. So this evolved over a period of time.
Okay. Well, do we want to stop at this point, or do you want to talk some more?
I'd like to stop.
Okay.